This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. When the pandemic first hit, there were some people who thought it would give them time to work on things like getting into shape. Some folks took to social media to talk about how they were going to debut their gains once things got back to normal. But it's been over a year and things still aren't back to where they used to be. Gyms may be open, but with a recent CDC report that gyms can spread COVID-19 without proper mask wearing and ventilation in place, folks might be a little hesitant to return to their routines. Today, we're talking about pandemic fitness and nutrition and how to get back into a high-octane physical regimen safely and effectively. And with us now is Lacey Bergery, a certified personal trainer and group fitness instructor out of Lafayette. Welcome, Lacey.
Hi.
So I want to start with, you know, you are a certified personal trainer and fitness instructor. How was your business affected when everything went into lockdown mode last year?
I think we all kind of went into panic mode. It's a part of our life. It's a part of our wellness that we get to help others, you know, meet their goals. And when that puts a direct halt to, you know, being able to live our everyday inspiring others, it got taken away so fast that we were trying to find our purpose as well. So we had to find that motivation for ourselves and hopefully help people virtually get their goals still going.
Mm-hmm. And do you work out of a gym? Was that difficult? Did that get shut down?
It did. It kind of went from classes being taken away and then all of a sudden we shut down. Everybody kind of did it at their own pace, but I believe we were one of the last ones to shut down.
Mm-hmm. And so when there was talk about everything shutting down, what was the option for you as a fitness instructor and trainer?
I still worked in a small group with people. We also did virtual classes. So there would be one instructor instructing over Zoom or some sort of media so that we could get across to the people that are at home who wanted to be safe. I did small group workouts outside. We didn't stay inside, but we had a small, close-knit group of people who felt safe being around each other.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine when the weather's nice, it's easy to do outdoor fitness classes. But when it gets cold, it's already hard to get up and get to the gym, let alone go outdoors. But you mentioned you were doing these virtual classes. What was that like?
Oh, it was different. It was so different. being able to be in person with people and call their name out and just encourage, but you had to pretend almost that you're with all of these people. You could see them, that they were logged in, but you would have to try to use that same motivating factor and send it out to them virtually. And hopefully it got to them and that they were pushing as hard as they could at home.
Mm-hmm. And I can imagine there were probably like frozen screens
and
all that technology.
Yes.
So what would you say? I mean, what would be the advantage with the virtual fitness classes for folks that are kind of like a little too nervous to go to the gym?
We still offer the virtual fitness classes because there are still people that don't really want to go to the gym, but the benefits definitely, they got to get up and move. They got to socialize because a lot of people are at home alone and they were quarantined by themselves. So that outside interaction for them was enormous. And being able to see your favorite instructor or, you know, see different instructors work together, and you got to try things that you probably would normally not try. And maybe in the safety of your own home, you would do a move that you wouldn't do at the gym in front of people.
Right, right. So there's a little bit of more privacy, I guess. One thing that I was thinking about is during the stay at home stuff, you know, I'm searching, you know, all the weights are like sold out. I can't find anything to do at home. Did you find that an obstacle for folks that were trying to work out at home, just having the equipment?
Yeah, I was one of those people who I always rely on the gym, and we never thought we would be in this position to not be able to go and use our equipment. That it was wild. So then when we sat down to maybe order like a few pieces that we could work with all the time, I mean, it took weeks for it to come in, and it was like a fight to stay on that website to get your equipment because in 2 seconds it would have been gone. And basic things that we could find all the time, they were gone. So we were lucky enough to be able to borrow from our gym if we were instructors, and that helped out. But definitely we waited forever for it to be shipped.
Yeah, I feel like I'm still waiting. I'm like, did I order something that I forgot?
Absolutely.
So what about the at-home fitness things that were already in play before the pandemic? You had like Peloton and all of these other sort of like things where you can connect to an app or work out with people. Did you see some of your clients moving more towards that? Was that increasing during the pandemic?
I still feel like a lot of people use the company that I work for has an online little app that you can grab workouts off of. It's not the same as being in class, but it has been helpful. And some people have gotten used to that and they still continue to do it. Peloton blew up during this time. Mm-hmm. And anything that you would see out there that you would kind of be, you know, I don't think I need it. The people are deciding they do need it and still do believe that they need it.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'm still in this desperate mode. Like I'm trying to find some invention. I've seen things where it's like a mirror and a wall and you can pull things out of it. And it's like resistance training. I'm like, I just need something because I can't go to the gym. The gyms are all closed around me. So speaking of that, what is the vibe like at the gym today?
We have had absolutely zero problems, and the people that are safe and feel pretty confident about coming to the gym, they're there. But the people that are a little hesitant, you can still kind of pick out of a lineup like, oh my gosh, I haven't seen this person in forever. And when you reach out to them, they're like, well, I'm just not ready to come back yet. And that's okay. I mean, they will get back to where they need to feel comfortable before they come back. And it's understandable. People have health related issues and they may not think that that's the safest place, but we have been the cleanest we've ever been in years, I feel like. I feel like that's really helped us out, is to maybe establish a better way of sanitizing.
Right, right. If you have questions or comments, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. So I want to ask you, you're mentioning there's safety measures and there's sanitizing going on. What about with one-on-one personal training? Have there been any new protocols put in place? You know, because usually you're up close, you're touching your clients, I'm assuming, helping them with their form and stuff. So what's that like now?
So within our gym, we have designated a room that's for personal training. So beforehand, we would be out working with the equipment and being on the machines, but now there is a sole room for that. So we don't have to be out with numerous amounts of people to be one-on-one with somebody. And, you know, on their mask, tell you they're comfortable with taking it off. And I mean, you'll know if you can get in somebody's personal space by how comfortable they are with you. So.
Mm-hmm. And what about the group fitness classes? How have those been going? Are they returning back to capacity or is it still a lot less people in a room?
We have gotten back up to capacity and we still have our dots and placements on the floor to see how far away people want to be. And then sometimes that just really helps knowing that we have those spaces that people can move around freely because there is quite a bit of room around them. So it helps us out in the long run with how our classes should look. And, you know, the people that come into my class, I usually go up and interact with them and they know that. And everybody seems to be pretty comfortable with it. And I try to give them their distance and maintain, you know, that comfort level for them.
Mm-hmm. And have you noticed any clients that maybe are back for the first time after a year? They haven't really done much and now they're just trying to work out and make up for lost time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, people feel like they have to tell you, you know, the quarantine did this, you know, we all had our downfalls during this time and it's okay. We'll get back to where we were supposed to be. And, you know, that this is a new, fresh start for everybody and you can really start enjoying your fitness and you probably realize that you need it a lot as, you know, the time went on and then you're like, I'm missing something. going back into the gym, it made people feel better being around people and, you know, having those same common goals.
Mm-hmm. And what about, do you have any tips for folks who want to get back to the gym? They've been away for a long time. Like, what is the first step that they should take?
I mean, even if they just go in, sign up for their membership, just get in there. Just get in there, walk on a treadmill, you know, do something by yourself first, and then you'll start to immerse yourself back into the culture. It's, you start to see people are doing what they're supposed to be doing, and, you know, you just have to be on your own level of where you want to be at that point. So I say start small, and then if they feel like expanding, go for it.
And what about for folks who are not ready to go back to the gym anytime soon? I'll say myself is one of those people. How can we do that weight training or something at home with minimal equipment? What is like something super simple?
I think even just having a set of maybe anywhere from 3 to 10 pound dumbbells, those are perfect for everything. And your body weight is fabulous for everything. So I feel like a lot of agility training, a lot of cardio work, that stuff is so easy to maintain. But if you want to just small weights, then I would say up to 10 pounds is fabulous.
Yeah. I just wish I could go back to like the 30 pounds I worked myself up to before the pandemic. Now I'm like 1 pound is too heavy. But yeah, I guess anything else you'd like to let our listeners know when it comes to getting back into fitness routine before we wrap up here?
I just say, do it at your own pace and you'll get back to it. And when you get into the gyms, you'll see that everybody is doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. And we're all there waiting for you. So come on in when you're ready.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Lacey Bergery, a certified personal trainer and group fitness instructor out of Lafayette. Coming up, we'll take a look at what the pandemic and lack of fitness has done to our bodies. If you have questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Folks who had the privilege to work from home during the pandemic may have initially thought, wow, this is great. Yes, I'm thinking about myself again here. This topic is very near and dear to me. But over time, you realize that you're sitting more and moving less. Add to that the easy trip to the fridge to snack throughout the day. And before you know it, you pull something just from standing up. Did I suddenly age 10 years or am I just out of shape? We're talking today about what working from home during a pandemic does to our bodies. With us now is Nicole Keith, professor of kinesiology at IUPUI. Welcome, Nicole. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Miriam. Great to be here.
So let's start with what happens to our bodies when our activity reduces, like it has for many who have been working from home or forced into quarantine.
So for people who are sufficiently physically active, and that means that they're doing both resistance training and cardiovascular training, as you decrease your resistance training, you will experience muscle atrophy. So you're going to get a little bit weaker. And as you decrease your cardiovascular training, you're going to notice that with just regular activities of daily living, it's going to be a little bit harder. So simple tasks like walking up and down the stairs or sweeping or vacuuming and dusting, you're going to notice that your heart rate is a little bit higher than it used to be before the pandemic.
Oh, that's interesting. Because, you know, I sometimes thought, like, am I having symptoms of COVID? My heart is racing, but I guess it's just I'm out of shape. You know, the simple tasks are too hard now. But how dangerous is this for us to be so sedentary?
So here's the good news. If you are doing those chores like I described, that is actually physical activity. So you don't have to leave your house to be active. And I was recommending during the pandemic to do those activities faster. If you noticed outside, people's yards were immaculate. New flowers, new mulch. But all of those activities are really good to keep our bodies moving. So going to the gym is good, but it's not for everyone. And there are other things that you can just do around your house or within your neighborhood to stay physically active until you're ready to go back to the gym. And it's really going to help you maintain. If you're going to the gym and you had pretty intense exercises, The activities that I describe are not going to maintain it, but you won't fall below a category that would be unsafe or unhealthy.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about on the opposite side of this for folks who maybe they had more time and were walking all the time and doing yard work, and now there's new aches and pains? Is there sort of the opposite side where maybe they didn't have proper form, or they're not using the right shoes, walking on concrete? Does that factor in at all?
Of course. And so if you have your shoes for 6 months, after 6 months, you should get new shoes. It's really important to protect you. Those shoes are going to protect your entire body. So your back and your legs and your shoulders and your neck. So it's really important to have great shoes for proper alignment. In terms of form, I think it's really good if you are not sure about your form to go see somebody like Lacey or a personal trainer or even a physical therapist if you feel like you've been injured, in order to make sure that you are doing things properly. But the idea is not to stop. And so even if you do have little aches and pains, that's why I say go see a professional, because the more you're sedentary, the worse it's going to get.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess that leads me to wonder, you know, how careful should folks be when getting back into exercising after being away from it, whether it's walking or hiking or biking? You know, I don't know. I'm just thinking like my own experience where it's just like, yeah, I can bike and it's been a year. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, my gosh, I should not have done that so fast.
Yeah, so it's a really good idea to ease back into it. We talk to people about using the talk test. So if you can have a conversation while you're doing cardiovascular activity, if you're by yourself, if you can sing, then you're at the proper intensity. And in terms of resistance training, you should be able to maintain the form you maintained with heavier weights. So you shouldn't change your form. That just means the weight's too heavy and you need to decrease it. And as far as going outside and walking, so any physical activity is good. And what I wouldn't recommend is for you to go outside and go walking in the morning and then jog at noon and then bike at night. That's too much. And so really paying attention to your body, regular delayed onset muscle soreness is normal. And so you'll feel sore for a day or two after increasing your intensity. That's normal, but it shouldn't be painful. And so there's a difference between soreness and pain. And I also want to say, no one should be afraid to be physically active. It's for all ages. And it's good for everybody. And even if you've been completely sedentary for the past year, get out and walk and start with 15 minutes because everything counts.
Mm-hmm. Everything counts. That's a really good point. And how was physical activity, you know, I'm thinking about during the pandemic, how was that taken into account in Indiana? Was that even thought of as something that we should be concerned about?
Well, it's always something we should be concerned about. And quite honestly, only 30% of the U.S. population meets the U.S. physical activity guidelines. So, you know, I was really pleased when the governor said that you could be active outside and you didn't have to wear a mask if you had intense exercise unless you were around somebody. And I was also really pleased to see how many parks and state parks were full of people being physically active. But I was disappointed in the introduction of your show. You talked about food insecurity and how food security was affected by the pandemic. I was a little bit disappointed how school districts and as in the city and the state did nothing to address physical activity insecurity. And kids were out of school. Mm-hmm. They didn't have physical education class. And if you went around the city, you would see like the parks taped off with police tape because they didn't want kids on the equipment. And so it was a little bit disappointing that there weren't publicly delivered options for adults and kids in physical activity like there was with food.
Right, right. And, you know, I would also share that concern just because I have children and it was like they didn't go to the park for a year and everybody's on an online class. And it's just like, how do you get the movement if you're in a small apartment and you can't go anywhere, and then it's winter? So there's just like these things that keep compounding on each other. What do you think could have been done to make that situation better?
So it was the Aspen Institute looks at these issues for children, and there were some specific recommendations. And I'm the president of the American College of Sports Medicine, And we had specific recommendations for physical activity safely during COVID-19. For kids, it's really tough because they like to play with each other. And so you hear about these recommendations for pods. And it actually happened in our neighborhood where you'd see five families and their kids would play together all the time. And none of them got COVID-19. And so it's just about being careful, making sure that you sanitize, not sharing equipment, and wearing a mask and socially distancing when you can. For adults, it's a little bit different because we can actually travel to be active. And so if you don't live in a neighborhood or a community where you have bike paths and trails, or you have green space where you can be active with sports, we can travel and intentionally exercise. But then again, adults were also cleaning like I've never seen before. And if you went by like the Goodwill, it was piled high because people were moving unwanted items out of their house. And so those kinds of activities also, anything that increases your respiration, you requires the use of large muscle groups, makes your heart rate beat faster, that's physical activity and it's good for you. And so there was a lot of that going on as well. Getting kids to clean up, they're not going to be really active. They're just going to be pretty slow. But adults will get really intense in these activities too. So if you are an exerciser traveling to exercise in green space and bike trails or walking trails is a really great thing. But if you're not, there's some things you can do right around the house.
Mm-hmm. And for, speaking of children, I mean, is it are they more resilient that they can jump back into things easier, or is it similar to adults where it's going to be a progression?
Don't you wish you could recover like you did when you were a kid? Yes, they're more resilient. And that it's also really hard to get a kid to sit still. And so depending on the age group, it's a little bit different with teenagers or kids who are in high school. But for kids who are in elementary and younger, they are never stopped moving. They were running around and having fun and playing with each other and playing with a dog. So they don't really stop moving. So their recovery is going to be little to none because they probably maintained. For high school students, it's a little bit different. And if they're getting back to sports, we really have to rely on coaches and athletic trainers to make sure they're doing that safely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, if you have questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. Nicole, I want to ask you, you have a program called Physically Active Residential Communities and Schools. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Sure. That is a exercise program that's for mostly adults, but we do have some high school students who participate as well, but it's held in school fitness centers. And so we have about 700 kinesiology students at IUPUI, and IUPUI really values experiential learning. And so for kinesiology students, or that's the study of human movement, we really want them to know how to work with all kinds of adults when they graduate. And so most of the PARCS is the acronym, participants, are referred from Eskenazi Health and probably couldn't afford a personal trainer or even the sliding scale that the Y offers. And so they can come to PARCS and for a very reduced price, and it's different depending on the location, but for some it's as little as $20 a year. They can work with kinesiology students who are training to be fitness instructors and personal trainers. And it's a win-win because the students get to learn how to work with all kinds of different people, and the adults are able to offer education to the students about life. And at the same time, they're working out with somebody who can show them how to do it safely and properly.
And how has this program had an impact in Indianapolis?
We actually have not measured impact except for attendance. And we've seen about 3,000 adults and kids over the last 13 years. The retention is okay, and we do monitor that. You know, the Eskenazi population tends to be a little bit more transient and a little less in control of their schedules. So we ask the students to be really patient. You know, the other challenge with that program is students turn over every semester. And so if an adult is really attached to the student and the student's not coming anymore, they might not come back either. And remember, less than 30% of the population exercises or meets the physical activity mm-hmm. guidelines. And then if you think about that small percentage, how many are going to go to a gym and work out, it's reduced even further. What we've noticed mm-hmm. during the pandemic is we've had students working virtually with adults, and they seem to like it better, the adults do, because they're not in a gym, there's no judgment. Like Lacey said, they can try new things. It happens to be a little bit more flexible. They don't have to travel and spend money on gas to get there or take up time. So they seem to really like that better. And our retention has been better across semesters.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to ask you about, you're mentioning kinesiology students that you work with and stuff like that. How did the pandemic impact this field, with virtual classes and stuff like that?
Well, we have been really creative with our semester schedule, first of all. So in March, we gave them 2 weeks for spring break. They came back. Everything was, they didn't come back. I'm sorry. Then we shut down for the summer. They came back in the fall. Classrooms and the gym and the dance studio and other activities were socially distanced. And so that was helpful. There was a lot of stuff going on virtually. So we do have the ability to record and deliver to our students asynchronously. I'm not saying that word right. But anyway, student schedules changed. Some of them are parents and they had kids who were doing e-learning, so they couldn't come to class at the regular time. Some had to work or they were caregivers for somebody. And so we were able to make it so that students could show up for class when they needed to show up for class. And for the activity classes, we had our grad students who teach like weight training or yoga or dance aerobics still broadcast from the facility with a camera so students could do things at home. And so it worked out mm-hmm. pretty well.
Yeah. It's still, I wonder though, I mean, it's still a little bit different than actually being in person. But did you find overall that I guess people who were taking these classes on the other side were enjoying it?
Well, it's really funny because I'm also the Associate Dean of Faculty Affairs for our school, and the campus decided that we weren't going to observe course evaluation scores this year because it's just not fair to the faculty. So if they want to share them, they can, but they don't have to.
Nice. So I do want to ask, I know we kind of touched upon this a little earlier about what people can do that is something minimal to get themselves back into the swing of things. What are some tips that you can offer our listeners who, you know, they're too scared to go back to the gym or they just, you know, they don't feel like it's right for it to be open now. What can they do besides like walking out? I mean, I don't know, lifting cans or a jug of milk for some resistance.
Yeah, that all works. And as Lacey said, using your own body for resistance is really good. And, you can do jugs of water or milk and cans. That does work. But I'm also saying if you have stairs in your life, run up and down the stairs. If you can go outside and just do outdoor calisthenics using trees and using, you know, whatever you can for resistance. The playgrounds are open again. And if you have kids, don't take your kids to the park and watch them play with them. So you will be really surprised when you get on a swing and start pumping. You're using those large muscle groups in your legs, and you'll be surprised at how much your heart rate goes up. But make sure you're playing with your kids all the time. Don't send them out to play. Go play with them if they'll let you. Some kids probably wouldn't like that. But jumping rope and climbing and pumping your legs on the swings and on the teeter-totter, pumping up and down. You probably can't do that with your kid because I would suspect you weigh more than they do. But anything at a park. I mean, a park is like the kids' gym. And if you live downtown, I can also recommend that right behind the natatorium, we have an outdoor exercise facility, and that was getting a lot of use during the summer because it's just outside. I would just recommend if it's hot to bring something because the equipment's metal and it gets really hot, or if it's cold. And then we're not disinfecting it. That's up to the user. So bring your Clorox wipes.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time and all the insight you shared with us. Nicole Keith, professor of kinesiology at IUPUI and president of the American College of Sports Medicine. We've heard about fitness and what lack of fitness does to our bodies. Up next, how does nutrition factor into all of this? If you have questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. There are so many different trends when it comes to nutrition. Oh, and the apps. Do they really help? Jump on social media and there's always someone hawking a supplement or tea or meal prep. So what is the right thing to do? And how do you even get started? After a year of stress eating and indulging in treats, it can be tough to get back on track. With us now to help us navigate the world of nutrition is Stephen Lalovich, a registered dietitian with Healthy IU. Welcome, Stephen.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with, most experts, they agree that proper nutrition with exercise is essential for a healthy body. But how essential is eating right while exercising?
Well, I think it kind of depends on your goals. A lot of people are focused on weight management, weight loss, and so exercise usually isn't enough by itself to promote weight loss. For some people it is, but most people have to bring in the nutrition component of it as well. And other individuals might be more focused on improving their fitness, building muscle. And of course, nutrition is an integral part of that. So getting all of your vitamins, your minerals, and of course, protein. Protein is what helps with muscle repair, muscle synthesis. And really, whether your goal is losing weight or building muscle, getting enough protein in your diet is really important for both. From a weight management standpoint, protein helps to regulate our appetite better. It digests more slowly. So having a higher protein diet is often helpful for weight loss to keep calorie intake lower and make that easier.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we hear a lot about protein, but I think it's hard for folks to kind of, take that into account because there's so many different fads out there all the time. When it comes to protein, I guess, like, what is the recommended amount that people should be getting?
Well, that's going to depend on a lot of factors, certainly your body composition, your height, your weight, your activity level. If you are someone who is lifting weights and really aiming for building muscle, your protein intake might be 50% higher than it would be otherwise. But mm-hmm. for most people, I don't think you need to track your protein intake. If you wanted to, probably a good ballpark for most people might be at least 20 grams of protein per meal. So maybe 60 grams of protein per day probably is a good minimum for the average person. Protein mm-hmm. is usually not one that I would put an upper limit on. So if an individual is interested in losing weight, maybe there's a calorie limit, maybe there's a carbohydrate limit. But protein is generally something that you can be a little bit more liberal with. I mean, theoretically, yeah, you could potentially consume too much protein, but consuming 150 grams of protein per day would be perfectly fine for most people. But a good way to conceptualize it without counting might be, you know, imagine a plate of food. We probably want to consume about a quarter of the plate in terms of protein, whether it's meat, poultry, fish, or plant-based proteins like beans, legumes. So having a good source of protein at each meal if you're someone who's eating snacks, maybe including some protein there as well, like a handful of nuts can be a good protein source as a snack. So kind of just generally using that rule of thumb, having some protein with each meal, at least 25% of the volume of the meal can work for most people.
Mm-hmm. Right. Talking about this food is actually making me hungry right now. So what happens, though, to folks who eat poorly but still exercise every day? Like, does that balance itself out?
I wouldn't say it balances out. I think the exercise can compensate to some degree. You know, one, the exercise is going to burn calories. So if you're over consuming calories, the exercise can compensate for that to some degree. But in terms of diet quality, the exercise doesn't really balance that very well. I mean, if anything, you really need more diet quality to support that exercise, to support recovery. And so, you know, a lot of people do just kind of focus on the quantity side of what they eat, thinking as long as I don't eat too much, I'm okay. But there's so many beneficial aspects to the foods we eat, not just beyond the vitamins and the minerals. We have a lot of phytonutrients in whole plant foods, which are anti-inflammatory compounds that can help to prevent chronic diseases. You know, if you're not eating those things, there is going to be some disease prevention aspects of exercise. But yeah, I guess in some ways you're going to be able to make up to some degree. But ideally, we're including all of those disease preventing lifestyle habits. So, yeah, it's hard to say which is more important. Diet or exercise. I mean, I would even throw in a third component, sleep, that ideally we're bringing all three of those things together, healthy sleep, healthy diet, regular exercise to have a healthy lifestyle.
Right, right. And sleep loss has been a huge thing, I think, during the pandemic. A lot of people have been staying up late, you know, Netflix binges, and just kind of sets that cycle going. When it comes to healthy eating, you know, how does Indiana rank overall in the scale of things?
I'm not sure about the statistics for Indiana with healthy eating, so I can't speak to that. But I think you brought up a good point that I'd like to expand upon in terms of, you know, the late nights and staying up watching Netflix and how that affects our sleep schedule. It also often affects our eating schedule. So thinking about just this loss of routine that a lot of us have experienced, and it creates an unstructured eating pattern where our body benefits from consistency, whether it's consistency with our sleep schedule or consistency with our eating pattern. So as I talk with people in one-on-one nutrition counseling appointments, we're often setting goals related to timing. You know, when are we going to have breakfast? When are we going to have dinner? What time is bedtime? What time are we going to wake up? So a lot of people use their work schedule as that anchor. And as, you know, remote work maybe has created more flexibility with the timing of work, our body's still going to benefit from consistency. And so I think it's important, you know, you could throw in exercise with that as well, trying to develop those routines with those different healthy habits.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of routines, I've heard this said before, I don't know if it's true or not, that when you develop a routine for healthy eating, sometimes it's easier to have the same thing every single day for a while until you get on track.
Yeah, I think that can be variable from person to person, but yeah, I think when you look at some of the statistics on people who are successful at following a healthy eating pattern long term, they often tend to have some meals that they just eat on a repetitive basis. So maybe it's having the same healthy breakfast every day. You know, for a lot of people, that's a great way to build a foundation of a healthy diet. Some people really want more variety in their diet, and I think that can work. But it's kind of thinking about your own personal trade-offs. You know, maybe it's worth the trade-off of being able to not have to think about what you're going to have day in, day out, and instead kind of create a healthy template that you can kind of stick with and make it easier in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed any sort of challenges that people have been facing during this pandemic that you've been working with? Is there like a common theme? Is it the working from home is creating stress eating, for example?
Yeah, a lot of people, not just stress eating, just the easier access to food throughout the day. So a lot of people are literally working from their kitchen. And so not having to take more than a couple steps to have a snack has caused a lot of people to overeat. And so that is a strategy where maybe having more structure and, you know, saying I'm only going to eat at these times rather than grazing throughout the day, that could help. You know, another thing is to think about how you could modify the environment at home to promote healthier food intake. You know, that could be keeping the unhealthy food out of the house. That might be the best solution. But even if you do have some of those less healthy snacks, maybe don't leave them out on the counter. Maybe put them at the back of the pantry so that you're not reminded of them constantly throughout the day. So just even changing where things are positioned in the refrigerator or the pantry can make a difference.
What are your thoughts about nutrition apps? There's things like Noom, there's calorie tracking apps. Are these useful for people who want to take that first step to get back on track?
Yeah, tracking can be very beneficial. And many forms of tracking can help. And so I think it's a matter of finding the app that works for you, but also even thinking about maybe it's pen and paper. Maybe that's the method of tracking that would suit you. So there's not a one-size-fits-all approach, but it can definitely be helpful for bringing some mindfulness and some awareness of what you're putting in your body throughout the day. You know, a lot of people don't really think about that. And once they start tracking or writing it down, they're kind of surprised to see the results at the end of the day. But some of the tracking apps are going to give you calories, grams of protein. And so if you want to look more into things like macros, the apps can be very helpful. But again, we don't want to necessarily get too caught up on just the numbers. You know, we don't want to just focus on quantity. We want to have that quality consideration as well. And I think Noom is one example of one that tries to bring in the nutrient density and the diet quality component to it. But I think if you wanted to do it even without an app, maybe even keeping track of the colors of your foods can be a good rule of thumb. You know, generally we're talking about fruits and vegetables, but those phytonutrients that I mentioned, they're going to go hand in hand with colorful fruits and vegetables. So if, say, on a weekly basis, we can try to include multiple servings of greens and oranges and reds and purples, and trying to get that rainbow of colors in throughout the week could be a good thing for anyone to track.
Mm-hmm. It can be kind of hard sometimes to find quality fresh fruits and vegetables. Is frozen or canned a good alternative, or is that like completely, are the nutrients gone?
No, those are still great alternatives. Freezing, canning, most of the nutritional value is going to be preserved. Canning can destroy a lot of the vitamin C, you know, freezing a little bit, but the majority of the nutrients. You could even argue that frozen vegetables are healthier than fresh in many ways because they're able to harvest the vegetables and fruit as well, frozen fruit, harvest them at peak ripeness and preserve them in that state. Whereas, you know, oftentimes our fresh produce is not really that fresh. You know, it had to be picked early, transported across the country or across the world. Any form, frozen, fresh, canned, is going to be a good source of all of those nutrients that we just talked about. And also going to preserve a lot longer once you get it home. you know, a lot of people are less inclined to go to the grocery store frequently now. So having those options like frozen and canned fruits and vegetables can be a good way to make sure you have those on hand if you're going to the grocery store less often.
Mm-hmm. So for folks who, you know, they're trying to get back on track, they're trying to eat healthier, but every so often there's that temptation to go back to the sugar or some other snack. What is something, I don't know if there's a behavior modification or something to cut off that temptation?
Yeah, one strategy could be to try to focus more on natural sugars like found in fruit. So trying to make that switch from candy or sweets to using fruit as, or even incorporating fruit in, say, baked goods in place of some of the added sugar. But this does get back to protein in that a lot of times those sugar cravings can be caused by fluctuations in our blood sugar. So if we have a blood sugar crash, our body's going to want carbohydrates, and sugar is going to be that rapidly metabolizing form of carbohydrate. So if we can prevent those blood sugar drops, that can help to curb some of those cravings. And a great way to do that is to make sure that when we are having a meal or a snack, we're including protein with it to slow down the digestion of the carbohydrates in that meal. And that helps to prevent our blood sugar from spiking and consequently prevents our blood sugar from dropping too low.
Mm-hmm. So would that also mean if you feel that craving to eat like a protein bar would be better than eating, I don't know, a bagel?
Yeah, maybe including a little bit of both. Maybe it's half of a bagel with some peanut butter on it. If you do experience that sugar craving, if you are going to have some carbohydrates or even some sugar, probably still a good idea to maybe grab a handful of nuts or a spoonful of peanut butter to have with it so that we don't just repeat the cycle then a few hours later.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, all this talk about food is making me hungry. It's Ramadan and I'm fasting, so it just all sounds so delicious. I guess before we get ready to wrap up here, what would you say is a key thing that anyone can do if they really want to get started and they're just really unsure of what the first thing is that they should do when it comes to eating healthy?
Yeah, I think a good starting point is to think about breakfast. Breakfast itself, eating first thing in the morning, has a lot of health benefits. In general, it's better to eat more of your calories earlier in the day rather than later. You know, we really want to try to avoid those late night snacks. And so starting with breakfast and maybe thinking about what kinds of foods that could we start the day with. Maybe it is habitual. Maybe it is a breakfast that you could kind of stick with over time. But think about the protein component. Maybe that's eggs. Maybe that's yogurt. Maybe it's the bagel with some peanut butter. Getting some healthy carbs in there. Could be a piece of fruit. Maybe some fruit and a boiled egg. So it doesn't have to be too complicated, but breakfast is a good starting point.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us today. Stephen Lalovich, a registered dietitian with Healthy IU. Our producers are Drew Dodlin, Micah Yason, Tim Brook. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. Join us tomorrow when we talk about Earth Day. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks for listening. This is All In.